You need the doctors.
No.
Elizabeth waved her handkerchief at him.
I'll be fine. I only need you and the sun in the south.
She leaned her cheek on the Tsar's arm.
Will you help me to my room, love?
Her voice frayed at the edges. He softened. Of course, dear. He pulled her up to her feet, but she stumbled and collapsed against him.
I'm sorry,
she whispered. The Tsar shook his head. Then he wrapped one arm around her shoulders and slipped the other behind her knees. She had lost so much weight. He lifted her as easily as if she weren't even there. What a wicked twist of fate that Elizabeth might be ripped away from him when he had only now begun to appreciate her. He needed to get her to the south as soon as possible. It was the only hope of saving her. As he carried her out of the study and into the hall, the captain of his guard fell in line behind him. The Tsar didn't even look at him as he gave his order. Get me Nikolai Karimov and Vika Andreeva. Immediately. Chapter 46. The guard led Vika through the Winter Palace, past all the paintings and mirrors, and wall upon wall of windows, all dark at this hour of night, until they reached a door flanked by more guards. They nodded at the soldier who escorted her, and he opened the doors and let her in. Vika's stomach had been in knots since the moment the guard appeared at her flat, and she'd hardly breathed the entire carriage ride here. The streets of St. Petersburg had passed in a blur of nondescript night, and all she could think was that the game was over. Either she or Nikolai was done. The Tsar would declare a winner and a loser tonight. But as she stepped into the room in the palace, some of the tension in her body eased. For this was no stern throne room. With its peach silk drapes and pale yellow furniture, and the scent of roses perfuming the air, it seemed completely opposite of a place from which the Tsar would sentence one of the enchanters to die.
You may sit until the others arrive, the guard said.
Vika didn't feel like sitting. Although the surroundings placated her a little, her nerves still jangled. But she sat on a daffodil-colored settee, because the guard wore a sword on his hip that she was quite certain he would use, should she prove to be anything other than compliant. Vika listened to the small clock in the nearby cabinet tick, 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 tock, tick, tick, tock. 352 excruciating ticks and tocks later, Nikolai arrived.
Vika,
he said as the guard who'd escorted him closed the door to the room. Nikolai's face was composed, elegant as ever, but the slight quaver in his voice betrayed him.
Fancy seeing you here,
Vika said, trying to lighten the sense of impending doom before it crushed them both.
You managed to dress impeccably, even in the middle of the night, although I can't say I'm surprised.
His carefully controlled rigidity cracked, and he gave her his shy smile.
You look lovely as well. I thought I might attempt to be presentable, if I'm to die.
Nikolai's smile wilted. Vika bit the inside of her cheek. So much for witty banter saving this night.
Do you know why we're summoned?
Nikolai asked. He didn't sit in any of the chairs, and the guard did not command him to. Vika shook her head.
I haven't a clue.
An interior door burst open at that moment. Vika and Nikolai must have been in an antechamber of some sort, and the Tsar strode out. Vika's stomach again leaped to her throat. Nikolai gripped the back of a chair and appeared equally ill. But somehow, they both managed to curtsy and bow to the Tsar.
Rise, he said.
Then he waved his guard out of the room. When the soldier had shut the door firmly behind them,
he said.
This is not about the game, enchanters. So you can stop looking like cattle going to slaughter.
Oh, thank heavens,
Vika exhaled. Although the image of cattle going to slaughter stuck with her. It might not be tonight, but it would be some night or day, not too far away.
The Tsarina is unwell,
the Tsar continued.
And she and I need to go to the south, to the restorative weather of the Sea of Azov. But I fear she will not survive a weeks-long carriage ride. Therefore, I need your help.
Nikolai bowed his head.
Your Imperial Majesty, I am happy to be of service. I can enchant your coach to carry you there faster.
The Tsar grunted. He turned to Vika.
And you? Can you do any better?
Vika bristled. Was this part of the competition, or was it not? The Tsar had claimed it was not technically part of the game. So why did it still seem as if she and Nikolai were being pitted against each other? And yet this was what Vika had always wanted, to use her magic for the Tsar. Perhaps she could heal the Tsarina. But no. From what Pasha had told her on the island, the Tsarina's condition was far more dire than anything Vika had worked on before. Mending the broken bones and stomach aches of animals was nothing compared to healing a sickness that even doctors could not cure. And Vika did not want to make a mistake. What if she made the Tsarina worse? What if she killed her? But the Tsar hadn't asked Vika and Nikolai to cure the Tsarina. He'd asked them to get her to the Sea of Azov.
I can evanesce, magically transfer, you and the Tsarina, your Imperial Majesty,
Vika said. But she didn't look at Nikolai. She didn't want to see if she'd upset him by showing him up.
You can do that.
The Tsar raised his brows.
Yes, your Imperial Majesty.
Will it hurt the Tsarina?
Vika wasn't sure. She'd only evanesced someone else once. And really, she'd only ever evanesced herself twice, if she didn't count the 2-foot experiment at Preobrazhensky Creek when she was younger. Blazes, what had she just committed herself to?
No,
Nikolai said, his tone steady.
It will not hurt the Tsarina when Vika evanesces her. It's mildly disorienting, but not painful.
Nikolai glanced over at Vika and gave her a subtle nod. She felt the tug at her chest again, that connection to him, and she smiled. He wasn't angry that her solution to the Tsar's problem was better. He supported her. Vika stood taller. Nikolai's confidence in her shored up her own.
Very well, then, the Tsar said. I shall make arrangements so the rest of our belongings will follow by coach. But the Tsarina and I will leave tonight.
The Tsar marched to the door that led to the hall and flung it open. He gave orders to the guards stationed outside. A minute later, he strode back into the room, straight past Vika and Nikolai, and walked through the other, interior door into a different room.
I suppose everyone will just think they left in the night for a romantic rendezvous,
Nikolai said quietly. Vika flushed. Not at the thought of the Tsar and Tsarina running away together, but at the sudden fantasy of her and Nikolai escaping the city and the game for their own secret tryst. She remembered what it felt like even just holding his hand in the step dream. How keenly aware she'd been of every single point at which his glove had pressed into hers. How her skin had tingled beneath the satin. How her composure had dissolved to jelly. Now she looked up to find Nikolai watching her, and the heat rose in her cheeks again. He couldn't know what she was thinking, could he? He smiled, then looked away. Oh, mercy. Soft coughing came from the room inside. Then, a minute later, The Tsar reappeared, his countenance much softened, with the Tsarina clutching his arm. They were quite a picture, him in his formal military uniform with his brow knitted tight with worry, and her in her white nightgown, smiling kindly, but looking anything but regal. Vika pulled herself together to refocus on the task at hand. Scandalous thoughts about other enchanters would have to wait.
"I am sorry to trouble you at this hour,"
the Tsarina said to Vika and Nikolai.
"But Alexander said you could help me."
"Alexander?"
How humanizing to hear the Tsar referred to by his name. For the first time, Vika saw him as simply another person, not the heaven-appointed ruler of an empire, and not the final arbiter of the game.
"Yes, Your Imperial Majesty," Vika said. "I believe I can help. Are you a doctor?"
Vika shook her head at this gentle, frail woman who had thought Vika's snowy gown at the ball had been a mere illusion of fabric.
"No, Your Imperial Majesty. I am not a doctor."
"My dear," the Tsar said, "these two are enchanters. They work with magic."
"Magic?"
He squeezed her hand.
"Yes, magic. It's real."
The Tsarina's eyes widened, and Vika could see Pasha in her expression. That innocent wonderment at the existence of otherness in their previously ordinary world.
"I am going to evanesce you to the Sea of Azov," Vika said. "Oh, my. What does that mean? And right now?" "It means I will magically transport you there, whenever you are ready." "What do you need me to do?"
the Tsarina asked.
"How will it feel?"
"You don't need to do anything," the Tsar said. "Correct?"
He directed the question at both Vika and Nikolai. Nikolai stepped forward.
"Your Imperial Majesty, do you like champagne?"
She smiled up at him.
"I do. Well, evanescing is a bit like being transformed into champagne. Vika's magic will turn you into tiny bubbles, and you will fly through the air, a bit giddy and a great deal effervescent, all the way to the sea. And then when you arrive, you'll morph from bubbles back to yourself again, with the Tsar by your side."
The Tsarina smiled even brighter.
"I rather like the idea of being champagne."
She turned to Vika.
"All right. I am ready.
Your Imperial Majesty, just one thing, if I may," Nikolai said.
The Tsarina nodded. He flicked his wrist and transformed her nightgown into a burgundy traveling dress. A thick mink coat appeared as well and settled on her shoulders. The Tsarina gasped, but clapped her hands, delighted.
"I should have thought to change. How silly to travel in a nightgown."
Nikolai dipped his head and smiled.
"Even evanescing ought to be done in style, Your Imperial Majesty."
She smiled back kindly at him.
"Indeed."
She turned to Vika.
"I believe Alexander and I are truly ready now."
The Tsar nodded, himself pulling on a fur-lined greatcoat. Vika glanced at Nikolai. Again, he gave her his subtle nod, his confidence. She turned to the Tsar and Tsarina. One breath. Two breaths. Three. And she evanesced the Tsar and Tsarina out of the Winter Palace, all the way to the sea. Chapter 47. Sergei cried out from his bed. Galina dropped the armload of firewood she was moving near the fireplace. With nothing else to do in Siberia, and with Sergei indisposed, she had begun finding solace in the daily chores of their household, and rushed to his side. His forehead beaded with sweat, and his black eyes were open, but seemed not to see her.
"Galina!"
"Shh, mon frère."
She dipped a nearby washcloth in a basin of water and dabbed it on his head.
I'm right here.
Something happened. There's no more.
Delirium tinged his whisper. The composure Galena had been trying to keep fell from her face. Her jaw tightened.
No more what?
No more of me left.
He rolled toward the sound of her voice, his eyes still unseeing.
Tell Vika the truth about who I am, who she is, and tell her I loved her.
Galena dropped the washcloth back in the basin.
Sergei, no.
I am finished.
No, I shall write to the Tsar. I'll request that he declare a winner and end the game. You will recover.
Sergei grunted.
You'll get better.
But he ignored her. It was as if his ears were failing him as well.
Tell Vika I am proud of her. And not to be upset at me for the bracelet. And for not telling her about me. Or about her mother. I did it all because I love her.
Sergei.
His eyes drifted closed. Then they flitted open again, only to droop and fly open once more.
Please don't go,
Galena whispered.
Sing to me,
he said. She swallowed the dread lodged in her throat, and she began to sing his lullaby. Her voice carried out from the cabin across the fields of snow.
Na ulece doshtik, svetra polivaet, svetra polivaet, zemlyu pribavaet.
Sergei sighed when she finished, and she tucked the sheets tightly around him.
Sing again,
he said. So Galena did. At the end of the song, Sergei let out a low moan. Buzzards screeched outside, and then the light in Sergei's eyes snuffed out. Her brother was gone. She buckled on the bed beside him and cradled him in her arms. And for the first time since their father died, Galena cried. Chapter 48. The night was shaded in midnight blue, and quietude kissed the air. Moonlight shimmered upon St. Petersburg's streets, and sleepy ripples rolled through its canals. There was no one out at this hour but the two enchanters. Nikolai smiled as Vika's footfalls on the cobblestones fell into sync with his. Unintentional, and yet so inevitable. After the Tsar and Tsarina had gone, he and Vika had taken a winding path through the city. Neither of them spoke, but they were both content with having no real destination at all. The game was still upon them, of course, but the restlessness, the disquiet it normally inspired, had lifted, at least for now. Nikolai watched as Vika moved beside him, impossibly light, impossibly strong. She had evanesced two entire people to the southern edge of the empire. She was a marvel. She was magic itself. She glanced over at him and smiled.
If only tonight could stretch on forever,
Nikolai thought. But suddenly, Vika gasped. She grabbed onto the leather bracelet around her wrist. Her knees gave way beneath her, and she collapsed. It was so fast, Nikolai didn't have time to catch her. Her head slammed into the cobblestones. If not for the embankment, she would have tumbled into the canal. Nikolai rushed forward.
Vika! Are you all right?
But she didn't move or even murmur. She lay limp on the ground with one arm hanging over the embankment, her fingers dangling over the canal. Nikolai's own heart pounded as he reached to take her pulse. It was there, stuttering like a broken metronome, but there, barely. Thank the heavens. He scooped her up and cradled her against his body, and for a moment her magic, albeit weak, meshed with his, and he felt again that hot jolt like their connection at Pasha's ball. And then, as quickly as it had come, it was gone, and Vika was just an unconscious girl in his arms. Nikolai held her tighter.
"It'll be fine," he said,
both to Vika and to himself, as he hurried toward the Zakrevsky house, which was only a few blocks away.
"Everything will be fine."
But that was a lie, for there was nothing about him and Vika that would ever be fine. What a fool he'd been to think tonight could be any different. When they arrived at his house, he charmed open the front door, hurled away all the protection charms he'd cast, and rushed her straight upstairs to his room. The door swung shut behind him.
"Vika,"
he whispered. She didn't respond. Her head lolled over his arm. She was a rag doll. He laid her down gently on his bed and covered her with a wool blanket.
"Vika,"
he said, louder now. But still there was no response. He checked her pulse again. It stammered, but it was there. He tried shaking her softly, careful not to jostle too hard. Nothing. If only he could see inside her, like she could when she healed animals. Then he could figure out what had gone wrong and how to fix it. He squeezed his eyes shut and tried. But he couldn't. It was all just a mass of red muscle and pink organs and crisscrossing veins. Living things were messy. It wasn't like seeing through the straight walls of a library at all. He rubbed his eyes with the heels of his hands.
"Think. If I can't use magic, then what? What would an ordinary person do?"
There was a girl who worked in the kitchen, one of Renata's friends, who constantly fainted. The cook kept smelling salts around to revive her.
"Yes, try that."
Nikolai opened his eyes and snapped his fingers. A silver vial of smelling salts appeared. He fumbled with the cap, and it clattered to the floor when he finally wrenched it off. He wafted the salts under Vika's nose.
"Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!"
After a few passes, she stirred, and her eyes flickered open.
"Nikolai? I thought I'd lost you."
He dropped onto the bed beside her. The knot in his chest unraveled.
"Where am I?" "In my room. Thank goodness you're all right."
This wasn't the death Vika's tea leaves had foretold. Nikolai threw the smelling salts onto his nightstand. He didn't care that they spilled.
"What happened? You fainted." "Oh."
Vika's eyes fell closed.
"Yes, I remember now."
The red of her hair spread like blood against his white pillowcase. It was so beautiful, and so baleful. He had to touch it. His fingers reached out. But her eyes opened again, and he stopped. He stuffed his hands beneath him, and sat on them to restrain himself.
"Are you all right?"
he asked instead.
I don't know. It felt like something latched onto me and sucked all my energy away. It happened so quickly."
She passed her hands over her face and her torso, as if checking for abrasions. Her right hand circled her left wrist.
"My bracelet. It's gone."
"What?" Nikolai whirled to his desk. Had something happened to both their gifts? He uncharmed the drawer and threw it open. But his knife was still there in the hidden compartment. It seemed intact and untampered with. He slid his drawer shut again and charmed the lock. Then he turned back to Vika, who had drifted off again.
"Vika,"
he whispered.
Was the bracelet enchanted? Did it have any special power? I don't know. How could it have fallen off?
He remembered how tightly it had cinched to her wrist at Bolshevnoi Duplo, and she'd been holding it when she collapsed by the canal.
I don't know.
Vika turned her head and coughed.
I'm sorry. This isn't the time to interrogate you.
He swirled his hand in the air, and a glass appeared in it.
Here, water. Thank you.
She managed to sit up and take a sip. Then she rested heavily against his headboard, as if even that small movement was too much work.
I haven't been this weary since the game began. I feel inadequate.
He looked again at her hair, and its fierceness, from the red down to the black stripe, seemed to represent everything she was.
You're anything but inadequate. You conjured an entire island. You evanesced the Tsar and Tsarina. Even now your color is returning. You're not at all as weak as you think.
But as he said it, conflict again knotted in Nikolai's chest. For part of him wanted Vika weak enough so he could win the game. But that part of him was rapidly losing ground to the part that wanted her to keep on fighting, to continue sparring with him, and to the part of him that wanted to kiss her, that wanted to ask her to stay, to put out the candles and see what happened if the scars of two enchanters touched in the night. The ground beneath him trembled at the thoughts. In fact, the entire room shifted. The paintings on his wall tilted. The glass of water spilled. Even the armoire moved several feet. Nikolai tried to clear his mind.
There are things more dangerous than a little magic, he thought.
Vika tensed on the bed, and he could sense a new shield around her, stuttering.
What are you doing?
She whispered. Nikolai shook his head, and the earth ceased its shaking.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking.
She scrutinized him for a second, then released the flimsy shield she'd cast around herself.
You have forceful thoughts.
Never had a statement been so true.
Deuces, he wanted to kiss her,
touch her, more.
Be careful,
Vika said, still eyeing him from his bed.
His bed. With what?
He managed to say, without his voice pitching high or revealing too much. Or so he hoped.
With thinking,
she said. Nikolai nodded.
I know.
He turned away from her and tried to focus on the wall, on something plain and quotidian and not tantalizing at all.
Thinking can be a perilous sport.
Chapter 49. As soon as the sun rose, Aijana heard the news of the Tsar and Tsarina's departure. It would have been easier if the Tsar had stayed put in the capital. It would have made killing him much simpler. However, the past 18 years had been anything but simple, and Aijana would not let a small bump in her plans derail her. She stowed away on the caravan of luggage at the Winter Palace. She would follow the Tsar and Tsarina to the south. They would not foil her vengeance so easily. Chapter 50. 2 days after Vika's uncharacteristic fainting incident, an envelope flew through the air and tapped its corner against her kitchen window. Vika leaped to open the glass pane and let the letter inside.
What is it?
Ludmila asked. The envelope was covered in frost, and the return address said only Siberia.
It must be father.
Vika smiled so brightly, the muscles in her face ached.
How do you know? Who else in Siberia would charm a letter to me this way?
What was inside? Where precisely was Sergei? And what had he been doing all this time? Vika tried to tear the envelope open, but her hands trembled, and her fingers acted as if they'd been reduced to useless sticks. She dropped the letter, and it skittered across the tiles, under the table. Vika crawled to retrieve it. The talon-shaped table legs seemed to stretch their claws at her. She scrambled to snatch the precious letter from their clutches. When she had the envelope again, she tossed it into the air and flicked her middle finger and thumb at it. The wax seal broke, and the stationery inside slipped out and somersaulted down to Vika's hands. She unfolded it along its deep creases. But the letter was not in Sergei's handwriting. It was something both harsher and more looping. Galina's. The bottom dropped out from Vika's stomach.
Dear Vika, we are not ordinarily to communicate with the enchanters during the game, but in this instance, I believe the rules will permit it of me. I am writing with the sad news that Sergei has passed. He wanted to let you know he was proud of you, and that he loved you as if you were his own. Which brings me to another difficult point. On his deathbed, Sergei expressed his wish that I tell you the truth of your origins. He was not, in fact, your father. Like me, he was a mentor, and he found you on the face of a volcano, abandoned by a nymph. The identity of your father is unknown, but Sergei considered you his daughter until the end, and he wanted you to know he was sorry he deceived you. He had thought, perhaps wrongly, that it was for the best. My brother's death is as much a shock to me as I am certain it will be to you. My apologies that this letter does not bear a happier report. With condolences, Galina Zakrevskaya.
The letter tumbled to the floor. There was no magic to suspend it. Vika stood paralyzed in the center of the kitchen. There were no thoughts. Ludmila picked up the letter and read it, a fat tear rolling down her cheek as she finished. She placed her plump hands on Vika's shoulders and steered her to her bedroom.
Sit,
Ludmila commanded. Vika did as she was told. Ludmila collapsed on the bed beside her. The mattress heaved with her weight.
Come here, my sunshine.
She gathered Vika to her bosom. Vika did not resist. There was nothing, nothing, nothing. Nothing except Sergei being gone. Chapter 51. Nikolai sat restlessly at a table in the corner of the Imperial Library's public reading room. It had been a week since Vika evanesced the Tsar and Tsarina, and nearly two since Nikolai created the dream benches. But Vika still had not taken her fourth turn in the game. So Nikolai tried to pass his time here in the library, until his scar alerted him that it was his turn. But he fidgeted so much that another patron complained, and the librarian had to ask Nikolai to relocate. Now he stared again at the words in a book on French poetry, but he couldn't make any sense of the verses. Why would a woman be compared to a carriage wheel, or death to an otter in a creek? He considered going back to perusing the tomes of the occult throughout European history. They were soporific, but at least they seemed based in reality. However, his thoughts wandered to Vika instead. At first, Nikolai had thought she needed time to recover after fainting by the canal. But then he remembered that she'd walked out of his house the other night, almost her old self. She'd been a bit shaky, but nothing a little sleep wouldn't fix. After all, she was the girl who'd conjured an entire island after a night at Pasha's ball. She was not easily fazed. Where was she? Even Ludmila's pumpkin was closed. Perhaps that was it. Something had happened with Ludmila, and Vika had gone to help her. It made sense. He'd conjured a few new stone birds, harmless ones, but they hadn't seen any sign of Vika or Ludmila either. Nikolai pressed his fingers into his temples, so hard he actually drew blood from his skin.
You have to stop obsessing.
Having Vika in his bedroom had scrambled his brain. He needed to reassess his priorities again.
Forget how soft she was when you cradled her in your arms. Forget the way her hair smells like honeysuckle and cinnamon. Focus on the game.
Nikolai scratched his fingernails down the sides of his face, until they found their familiar place behind his neck. He stared blankly at the French poem below him, and lowered his forehead to the pages, resting, ostensibly, on the library table. He was still in that position when someone thrust a heavy book onto the table. Nikolai started. Pasha slid into the seat across from him. He wore his best, or worst, depending on opinion, disguise, that of an unkempt fisherman. He was unshaven and dressed in a rough tunic and trousers, so bedraggled he could have emerged straight from the bottom of the bay. It was certainly not the look of a Cesarevich, but it was also not the look of someone who would ordinarily frequent the Imperial Library. A few patrons eyed Pasha with disdain.
What are you doing here?
Nikolai whispered.
Searching for you. You've been avoiding me again.
No, I've only been... ill.
But not too ill to read French poetry.
Pasha tilted his head to better see the slim volume on the table. Nikolai flipped it closed.
On the contrary, the poetry made me only more ill.
Pasha smirked.
Regardless, I've tracked you down once again.
He tapped the cover of the book he had brought.
This explains everything.
Nikolai glanced down at the book, and his stomach lurched, as if Pasha had brought the smell of fish past its prime into the library with him. Russian Mystics and the Tsars.
Where did you get that? And what do you mean it explains everything?
I've had it for a while, but you were so against me pursuing Vika and seemed... repulsed, almost, by the idea of magic, that I hadn't shared the book with you. I didn't want you to think me a fool. But it really does explain everything. The enchantments around the city, the island, Vika.
Nikolai swallowed, but didn't speak. Had Pasha finally caught up to Nikolai's deceit?
I thought the charms around the city were merely amusements, well-timed for my birthday,
Pasha said.
Oh, how vain I was! They are a game, but an ancient one. The Crown's game.
Nikolai gripped the edge of the table, as if the library were a ship heeling beneath him. His knuckles were bone white.
Don't you want to know about the Crown's game?
Pasha asked. Nikolai shook his head.
Well, I'll tell you anyway.
Pasha began, in a low voice, to relay the details of the contest between enchanters. He started at the beginning, in the age of Rurik, and wound his way through a catalogue of past games, his eyes lightening and darkening as he recounted the history. Nikolai held the table even tighter. Only when Pasha had finished did the color seep back into Nikolai's hands. Pasha had not mentioned Nikolai's involvement in the game. Yet. Pasha poked the Russian Mystics book.
Have you nothing to say? Nikolai! I've just informed you that there's an ancient contest of magic taking place in our midst. And that the girl I almost kissed is in the center of it and might die.
Nikolai groaned and brought his head back down to the incomprehensible French poem.
You almost kissed her?
He asked into the table. Jealousy blazed inside him. So much for trying not to think of Vika in that way.
When?
Where?
On the island, soon after the benches appeared, Pasha said. I tried to kiss her, but she told me she wasn't in a position to fall in love.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but she promised I'd know if it changed.
Nikolai wanted to disappear into the table.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because you sleep too damn much and never come out with me anymore. But I'm telling you now, and you're flat on the table, falling asleep again.
Pasha thumped his hand on the book. Somebody nearby shushed him, then made a fuss of standing up and relocating to a table much farther away.
I'm not falling asleep, Nikolai muttered.
It would have been impossible to. Pasha had, almost, kissed Vika. How could Nikolai have even thought he'd have a chance with her? Of course she would fall in love with Pasha. Pasha was the heir to an empire, and he was smart and dashing and could win a war with his smile. He was also not at risk of dying in the game. And that explained why she told Pasha she wasn't currently in a position to fall in love. She still didn't know how the game would end. But if she won, then she would be in a position to fall in love. She would be Imperial Enchanter, and she would no longer fear commitment to Pasha, for she would know she could live happily ever after. And Nikolai would be alone. No, dead. Exactly as his tea leaves had predicted. Pasha knocked on Nikolai's head.
Then if you're not asleep, talk to me. You're my best friend. I think I love her, and she might die.
Nikolai peered up from the table.
You cannot love her. You hardly know her.
If there were ever a girl a man could fall in love with without knowing, it would be Vika. I have to stop the other enchanter. Say you'll help me.
Were the library truly a ship, this would be the moment that it sank.
Nikolai.
He shook his head.
Say you'll help me.
Nikolai exhaled deeply. Why did Pasha have to get involved? And yet, Nikolai had to respond. He couldn't hide against the table forever. He pulled himself upright and charmed away the nausea and despair from his face, although it cost him what felt like the rest of his integrity to do so. Instead, he put on the facade of being the same Nikolai he had always been, the practical one to Pasha's whimsy.
I told you the first time we saw her, Pasha, that Vika is not the kind of girl you can give a glass slipper to and expect to turn into a princess. Likewise, assuming this crown's game is not mere legend, you cannot interfere. She wouldn't want you to. But perhaps in this instance... No, she would not want your help. And regardless, you would be of no assistance. What would you do? Murder the other enchanter? For what other way is there to stop him?
I don't... I admit I didn't think it through quite that far.
He tugged on his hair and the fisherman's cap fell off. Nikolai picked it up and tossed it back at him.
I'm right, you know.
Pasha turned the fisherman's cap in his hands.
Let it go,
Nikolai said, as much to Pasha as to himself.
Forget about trying to control the game, and let it take its course. It will end how it needs to end.
Pasha frowned.
I wish there was something I could do to change it.
Nikolai closed his eyes.
Me too, Pasha. Me too.
Chapter 52. Vika sat on the floor of the apartment and stared at the imagination box. She had brought it inside the flat after the ball, a rash and likely imprudent carryover from dancing with Nikolai, and it had been there ever since, And unlike the masquerade box, the imagination box's magic hadn't been extinguished. Vika hardly blinked as she looked at it. One panel was covered with the word Father carved over and over, followed by the words Lies, 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 lies.
Father, 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 she thought. I miss you, Father. I'm sorry, Father. I didn't know, Father. Lies, lies, lies. I don't know my father or my mother. Was everything you ever told me a lie?
The other panel on the imagination box was covered with angry slashes, and the words The Game and Galina and Nikolai and Blame.
It's your fault. Without you, without the game, he'd still be alive. It's all your damn fault.
Vika growled through her tears. Then she reached out and touched the imagination box. She obliterated the words with a single, violent swipe. Chapter 53. The bridge spanned the Fontanka River, composed of two stone arches with a wooden drawbridge in between. Four Doric pavilions housed the drawbridge mechanisms, and it was in the corner of one of these pavilions that Pasha stood, hiding. He'd grown out some of his blonde stubble into a two-day-old beard, shadowed the rest of his face with a wide-brimmed hat, and donned a frayed coat over a common laborer's rough tunic and breeches. He'd even sewn lopsided patches onto the knees.
Hello, Frenchie,
Ludmila said as she approached the opposite side of the pavilion. He peeked out from under the hat. A grin spread across his bearded face.
Why, if it isn't my Aphrodite of the pumpkin. How did you find me here? A hunch.
Ah, it was Ilya, wasn't it?
Ilya was the youngest member of Pasha's guard, but the best one at guessing his whereabouts.
I'll have to be slyer to outwit him. Though he doesn't inform the rest of the guard, which I appreciate.
He thought you'd be watching the boats.
Indeed. I'm trying to work out the inefficiencies in the water traffic around the city. There are times when there is too much traffic, and others when there is none at all. The delays cause all manner of problems, from spoiled goods to missed connections to accidents while the boats wait in the queue.
Ah, and here I thought Ilya meant you were merely watching the boats as boys do when they dream of becoming sailors.
Ludmila chuckled.
Don't you have a harbor master whose job it is to manage this?
I do, and the Tsar has asked me to meet with him several times. But he knows nothing except what's written on his timetables. But that's just paper, and reality isn't paper. Is it?
Ludmila shook her head.
So, I came to see the situation for myself. Also, I just like looking at boats and dreaming of becoming a sailor.
Pasha flashed his famous smile.
But you did not seek me out to discuss river traffic. What can I do for you today, Madame Fanina?
It's about Vika.
Pasha inched closer to where Ludmila stood.
I've been wondering where she is. There haven't been any new enchantments in a fortnight. I thought perhaps it was because the festivities for my birthday had concluded.
Ludmila hung her head.
Vika's father passed away.
Oh no.
Pasha left the cover of the pavilion now and came out to the main part of the bridge.
She received word 2 weeks ago. I haven't been able to convince her to leave the flat.
Pasha continued to stand still and steady, as a Cesarevich should in the face of tragedy, even though he wished he could fly to Vika's apartment that very instant to gather her in his arms.
What can I do?
he asked Ludmila.
Will you talk to her? Invite her for a walk, or do anything to take her mind off her father for a short while? I realize it's bold of me to ask, and you have the boats to observe.
No, I'm glad you came to me. I shall send a coach for her straight away. His carriage pulled up to the Winter Palace, hopefully with Vika in it. Pasha had returned home to shave and put on neater clothes, and to have pity on his guard, and actually informed them of his location and intentions. Now, as he passed Ilya in the courtyard, he patted him on the back and whispered,
"The boat's at Chernyshev Bridge. Well done. I'll best you next time."
The guard laughed before he snapped his mouth closed and attempted to look stern again. Pasha slipped into the carriage as soon as the coachman opened the door. Vika indeed sat inside, dressed in all black. She had even changed her hair so that it was no longer a single stripe of ebony, but an entire mantle of it. Amin managed to darken even the white-paneled walls and cream leather of the carriage. Good gracious, Ludmila had been right. This Vika was a different girl entirely.
You requested my presence?
She hardly glanced up as Pasha slid onto the seat across from her.
I heard you needed a change of scenery. The scenery in my room was fine.
Ludmila said you've been staring at the face of an armoire with only an evil-looking rat as company. I don't think that qualifies as fine.
His name is Poslanik.
Pardon?
The rat. The rat's name is Poslanik, and he isn't evil.
Ludmila is concerned about you. The carriage started with a lurch, and the sound of horses' hooves, both those that led the carriage and those that belonged to the guard, surrounded them.
Where are we going?
I thought we might go for a ride in the country. I asked the coachman to take a scenic route to Zarsko Selo, my family's summer residence. No one is there now, so the gardens will be all yours. Perhaps the fresh air will do you good.
My father is dead, or the man I thought was my father, and my mother, whom I thought had died, apparently did not, but abandoned me instead. My entire life has been a lie. I doubt fresh air will do a thing to change that.
Pasha sat back in his seat and looked at her scowl. She was still beautiful, but with her expression as black as her hair, her beauty was of a fiercer kind, an almost frightening kind. After Vika's warnings about the danger of magic, Pasha wondered if he'd taken the recent enchantments too lightly, and if he'd fallen too easily under Vika's spell.
"I'm sorry,"
Vika sighed, and the furrow of her brow softened.
"I appreciate you coming to see me. I shouldn't take my grief out on you."
"It's all right. It must have been quite a shock." His concerns about her ferocity fell away. Instead, he wanted to protect her. But that was foolish. A girl like Vika didn't need protecting.
"I didn't even know he was sick," she said. "Father had gone away on a trip, and I simply assumed he was safe. He was so strong, I never imagined him otherwise."
Pasha wanted to cross the space between them and comfort her, but she would probably shift away, wouldn't she? It was certainly a risk. But she'd come in the carriage. She could have declined. Pasha decided to take the chance. He moved across the coach to the seat beside her, taking her hand. She startled and almost withdrew it, but then she didn't. She leaned against him and rested her head on his shoulder instead. A smile bloomed across Pasha's face. Even in her grief, Vika smelled sweet, like flowers and warm spice. He tried not to move at all, so that she would stay nestled into his side.
"Father gave his entire life to me," Vika murmured.
But what was the point when he didn't survive long enough to...
To what? She shook her head against his shoulder.
I must make him proud. I can't let his death be in vain.
Pasha touched her arm gently.
I'm sure he was proud. It would be impossible not to be.
The roads grew rougher the farther they traveled from the center of St. Petersburg, and the carriage bumped along the dirt. Soon they were outside the city limits, and the scenery gave way to more space. Fewer buildings, save for the small houses that sprinkled the landscape every now and then, and more fields and clusters of red and gold-leaved trees. It was a good plan, Pasha thought, to head to Tsarskoe Selo. A walk through the gardens and woods really would do Vika good. She didn't speak much, but Pasha was all right with that. She didn't need his words. She needed room to breathe. He did not, of course, understand the full extent of her grief, but he knew the fear of it. He thought of the Tsar and Tsarina at the Sea of Azov. Pasha shuddered.
Mother will be all right. She'll recover. She'll return.
As the carriage approached Tsarskoe Selo, Vika fell asleep against him, and Pasha was loath to wake her. Ludmila had told him of Vika's nightmares, the constant tossing and turning and unconscious wailing. So when the coachman slowed the carriage and inquired whether Pasha wished to stop, he commanded the coachman to continue onward. They would take a circuitous route around the nearby villages, then proceed slowly home to St. Petersburg. Pasha watched the countryside fly by. Occasionally, villagers would come out at the sound of the approaching horses, and when they saw the double-headed eagle on the carriage, they would fall to their knees in the grass and the dirt. Children chased after the coach. Gavriel tossed coins for them onto the road as the coach rambled away. When they were almost back at the outskirts of St. Petersburg, Vika's head rolled on Pasha's shoulder. He caught her gently before she slipped down, and he repositioned her so she could continue to sleep. For a moment, he thought about kissing her. Maybe just on the top of her head as she slept. But then he scowled at himself for even thinking of doing it without her permission. And then Vika's hair fell to the side and exposed her bare skin. Pasha gasped. She writhed as something glowed orange on her collarbone. Two crossed wands, searingly bright as if they were the tip of a branding iron. Nearly invisible wisps of smoke floated up from the wands, and a faint hint of smoke that Pasha had not noticed before lingered in the air. The wands were the same as the ones in his book.
So it really is true, he thought.
And for a second, Pasha grinned as if he'd shot 100 partridges in one day. Nikolai had not wanted to believe him, but Pasha had been right. For once, he'd known something Nikolai hadn't. The crown's game was real. But then beside him, Vika gritted her teeth, and as the scar glowed brighter, she thrashed as if she were caught in the throes of a diabolical dream. How long had it been her turn? How long had it been burning that it hurt her like that? Reality rushed at Pasha, and he saw Vika through a whole new lens, one in which she was actually fragile. Because if the crown's game was real, it meant Vika truly could die at any moment. He didn't want to lose her.
I'll find a way to end the game, Pasha said aloud. I swear on my mother's throne. I will.
Chapter 54. The magpie and the fox was crowded as usual, but Nikolai had sent word earlier of Pasha's request to meet at the tavern, and Nursultan had reserved their table in the back. Nikolai arrived first. It happened on occasion when Pasha had to take an alternate route to evade his guard,
and Nikolai sipped on his beer while he waited.